Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And if you haven't yet written a book, do you think there's one in you somewhere? Likely, because apparently around 81% of Americans feel that there's some book in them somewhere that needs to come out. And how? What's the best way we can do it? Seems like an arduous task and maybe something that wouldn't be successful. Maybe that's why we don't want to try it. But there's hope. There's opportunity. And I want to talk about that because I've read a wonderful book called Write from God. Hey, that's very exciting to write from God. What does that mean? We're going to find out what that means by talking with the author, Tom Bird. Tom, welcome.
Thank you, Peter. It's a pleasure being here this morning.
Now, you're really the right guy for this job because how many people
have
you...
No pun intended.
What's that? Oh, right.
No pun intended.
I heard you, yes. Well, there's a lot of writing going on. Hopefully, we'll speak rightfully, too. So you've helped a lot of people write books. How many people have you helped approximately at this point?
Well, approximately 85,000.
Oh, is that all?
The authors I've worked with. Yes, and I've personally helped about, I would say 7,000 or 8,000 actually write their books in my company.
In your company? And that means that they sit with you year in and year out while they're writing their books?
I would never suggest someone sit with me year in, year out. But if they can donate a weekend, I think that'd be fair for both parties. So we hang out for a weekend and we get our books written.
That's amazing to hear. And it's something I really want to talk with you about because it's a new understanding about how to write a book. And that's why you call it writing from God, because it's being divinely inspired so that in a weekend, so many, let's call it divine words, come out of people that they put a book together.
Well, you know, Peter, every great passage in every great book has been written while the author was in supposedly a connected, surrendering state, when the words just poured through he or she. And what I've learned to do is just harness the ability to get into that state and stay in that state, so the author or myself included, when I write my books, it's almost like a direct divine download of a book. And most people believe that they have a book stuck inside them that they need to get out. And it's not so much creating the book, you know, it's as more releasing the book that's already there. In fact, in all my years of work with new authors, and I've worked with new authors now for 32 years, I've never taught anyone how to write a book. I've taught them how to connect with a book that's already there. So when you tap into it, it comes out very rapidly, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners have already experienced where writing just poured through them uncontrollably. Well, that's what I refer to as a divine author within state. And the whole ability, your whole essence of being able to write a book well and write it quickly is just based on tapping into that state and staying into that state and allowing the writing to take over you.
Right. I have a feeling that we have maybe two different kinds of books in us. And one is, let's say, the left brain book, and the other is the right brain book.
Well, no one's going to read the left brain book.
No matter how valuable it may be,
because what today's readers buy more than anything else is a book that makes them feel something. And right. The key to making them feel something is for the author to feel something when he or she was writing the book to begin with. So the left brain thinks it can write a book, and it probably can. It'd be extremely informative, grammatically correct, boring pamphlet. And the right brain doesn't care so much about the grammar, the punctuation, the spelling, or the content as much as the presentation.
Right.
And today's readers buy the author and the author's passion before they buy the content of the book. So And as you can see, the New York Times bestseller list has a lot of extremely passionate but poorly written books on it. And I'm not suggesting people write poor books, but the point I'm trying to make is that the passion is the most important part, most important component of garnering the readership that we all seek as authors.
And that's so important to understand about ourselves, is that we do have this passion, we do have our feelings that can flow out of us once we put our pen to paper, and we don't realize what's going to flow because, and you talk about in the book, it's already written, and it might have been written before we were born.
And that's the only way I could figure it out, Peter.
What's that?
Because, again, I don't really help people write books, teach them how to write books as much as help them write books through tapping into it. And that's what I teach is based on my experience. It's not a philosophy that I had conceived of and then applied. It's something that I've learned through trial and error. And the only thing I can determine is that the books that we're tapping into were already written in a different time and a different place and probably before we were born.
Right. And so we're tapping into a greater consciousness beyond our left brain mind. And so there's a mystery there. And maybe the mystery can only unfold itself and clear itself in our understanding of ourselves by putting this pen to paper and getting it going, because you talk about it as being a major healing opportunity.
Well, what I really feel personally happens, Peter, is that when we connect with these books, which I feel are on the other side of life, we're connecting with the other side of life, and we're connecting with God. And so as the book comes through us, it carries through us as well a healing nature that heals aspects of us that would keep us from being in direct communion with God. And that's what I see
right. All
the time. And again, I've been working with New Authors for 32 years, and be honest with you, if this is the first time I heard what I was saying, I wouldn't believe it, because I hadn't experienced it, but I've experienced it thousands of times now, and I have unhappy, depressed people, frustrated people, angry people, hurt people come into my retreats, and after they finish the writing of the book, they leave completely different. They leave enlightened, happy, purposeful, directed, heartfelt, and the only thing I can figure out is the difference between where they were before they came to the retreat and where they were after the retreat is the book. And I can actually see them healing themselves right before me through the writing of their book. So I believe they're connecting with something much higher than us and something divine and potentially directly with God. And God wants that direct communion between us and he, she, or it, and removes anything through healing that could stand in the way of that becoming a reality.
Right. And see, it's interesting that we're using the word God, because Neil Donald Walsh, in his book Conversations with God, said, well, I don't know if this is actually what a person we can call God, but it's certainly the other side, and it's certainly divine, and it's powerful information. And I do believe in a multidimensional universe, and on the other side is a greater society than we have here, and certainly a nicer one. And with the umbrella of it, let's call it being God. And so we're really tapping into other dimensions where there's a greater intelligence than ours that feeds us.
I agree with you. My philosophy mirrors yours exactly, Peter. I just wanted to try to simplify the explanation of experience as easily as possible, so I just call what we tap into God.
Right, and that's helpful,
because it's something that people will resonate with.
Right, otherwise it's a much longer conversation.
I don't know if I have enough time left the rest of my life, next 40 or 50 years, to explain what God is. And that's not my mission. My mission is to help people tap into, to see a greater purpose to the writing of their books than just words, and to tap into that greater consciousness through the writing of their books.
Right, and so to do that, you have workshops that facilitate our brains, you know, or our minds. I don't know how we want to look at it, but it's a way to get ourselves out of our own way.
Yes, exactly. I have writing retreats called Write Your Bestseller to Weekend Retreats. I'll hold about 7 of them next year, most of which will be in Sedona, Arizona, where I live. And what I really do is create a safe transition and birthing space for authors to step into, where they're guided, they're directed, they're safe, and where they have nothing but time and space to concentrate on what their soul's asking them to do, which is write a book. And again, you know, we've been very successful in having students write books. 97% of our people finish their books in a weekend. We've had over 40 number one Amazon bestsellers in the last 2 years. However, I have to admit from a very biased personal perspective that the biggest thrill for me is not the writing of the books, because I know it's going to happen. We're a very well-oiled system. But what really turns me on is watching the personal transition that people go through as a result of writing the books at the retreats. That's why I feel the most valuable aspect of our retreats are. It's a soul rebirthing through it. It comes as a result of a direct connection with spirit, God, whatever you want to call he, she, or it.
Right. In another way, I had an experience. I wrote a book. It was in the 1970s, and it was actually a travel guide for runners around the United States, and it was a guide to running in 125 American cities, and I only had a budget to travel to about 35 of them, so I had to write the rest of them, and this is when there wasn't an internet, and research was difficult, and so each morning I'd wake up to write about a different city and doing some research, but for some reason I knew all about that city that in ways that I couldn't understand, and I wrote about it. When the book came out, there were people from these cities that said, when were you here? Because it would have been nice to have connected. You know, and I said, well, I wasn't there. And they said, well, you couldn't have written this unless you were here.
Yeah.
And I learned about myself, because since then I've learned that I'm very, very intuitive, and I do that as for a living. And looking back on that, that was really, you know, I was given this information maybe while I was sleeping or something, and I woke up with it. And so,
I think you're very intuitive, but I'd also say, I think we're all intuitive, Peter, but I would say that judging from your experience, you're very open. That's even a smaller minority than being intuitive. You're very open to being intuitive.
That's true.
And so you didn't really create the experience as much as you released the experience of visiting these cities that you had not visited physically. You released the experience of having gone there probably at night or on the other side of life.
Right, exactly.
And that's exactly what we do when we write our books.
Well, see, you write them with pen to paper, and I write, and at that point, it was before word processors, and I wrote on an electric typewriter with whiteout and all that stuff. So it was a much more drawn-out process.
We start out pen to paper at the retreats because it gives the author more of a direct tactile connection with the inspiration coming through. But we quickly transition to keyboards if the author chooses to do so in about 3 hours. And thank God we don't have to use whiteout. But spell check is still, as wonderful as it is, it can be such a distraction when you're writing a book as quickly as you write. Because the average speed of the writing speed of the author who's properly prepared to attend one of her retreats is about 2,500 words per hour. So the inspiration just pours through you. And the average length of an American adult book by a first-time author is now 35,000 words, so it takes them between 12 and 15 hours to finish their books at the retreat.
Wow.
In fact, our last retreat of the year we did in Santa Fe, and it was just about a month ago. And we start on a Thursday night for the retreats, and we go all day Friday, Saturday, and half a day on Sunday, and half the retreat group finished their books on Friday, the first full day of the retreat.
They just sat around and watched after that.
Well,
maybe
they
wrote a second book.
Actually, the retreat is just about a day longer than it needs to be. Everyone finishes their book. Everyone there last two retreats finished their book by 4 o'clock on Saturday afternoon.
which gives us a Saturday night and Sunday through the afternoon to work on the revision of their books. So we write the books at the retreat, but they're not, books aren't really finished until the revision's done, and we have a unique approach to revising a book as we do to writing a book. So we like to get our authors into the revision mode and into the process before the retreat ends so they can continue with the revision and complete the book at home.
Oh, that's good. And now, how big, you know, it's not Tolstoy writing these long novels, so how big does a book have to be?
Well, the average length of American first-timer's book is about 35,000 words, which is about 200, 225 pages by most standards. We do have authors that come in and write a book for, that'll be 60 or 70,000 words, which is very long in today's world. Books have shrunk in size, but are just as thorough in content as they used to be.
Uh-huh.
So the 3% of people that don't finish their books at a retreat usually are accounted for by the people that are going to write a 60 or 70,000 word book and they finish their books and they're done and at home. But the Tolstoy type book, the War and Peace, the Moby Dicks, they just aren't written anymore. You know, I firmly believe my experience has taught me that all great books are written from the spiritual side of life. And the spiritual side of life wants to connect with us. And if Moby Dick, a great book, was released today for the first time, no one would read it because it's too friggin' long. And who would want to read 187 pages to begin the book on the skeletal structure of a whale? You know, the books today are much more direct, much more passionate, much deeper, and much shorter, though. Because of the Internet, that's one factor. And because people know a lot more about the world now on a casual basis than they knew previously. So if books are written on the spiritual side of life, the spirit wants to connect with the people on a conscious level on Earth. So it does so in such a way that makes it conducive for itself to be read. So books have gotten a lot shorter, Doesn't mean that people aren't as good of readers. People today are better readers than they've ever been. But they just want you to get to the point a lot quicker. And, you know, with a book like, again, Moby Dick, people would read it back when it was written because they had nothing else to do. They didn't have satellite TV. They didn't have the Internet. And so they had a choice of either reading or knitting or barn dancing. And today there's a lot more distractions, so books are a lot shorter. But the readership of books is much higher today than it's ever been. And kids are reading at a much higher level than they've ever read. You know, the Harry Potter series shows that. I mean, it isn't unusual for an 8- or 9-year-old to read Harry Potter, and that's a pretty substantial book for anyone to read, let alone an 8- or 9-year-old.
Yeah.
So everything is really leaning toward the development and expansion of spirituality in life through the writing and reading of books. And it's a tremendous shift in our consciousness, a tremendous shift. More people are writing books than ever written them before, and more people are reading those books than ever before. And it's helping with the shift in our consciousness for us to return back to the innateness of who we really are and a recognition of who we really are in spirit as well, too. And I'm just glad that I can play a small part of it.
So it comes back to each of us wondering what's in us and how well can we flow. And then I'm thinking of somebody like Philip Roth. What got in his way?
Mm-hmm.
He quit. He had to quit writing. He said it was too painful. Well, he's an old guy.
I read all Philip Roth's books.
What's that?
And there are two stages to a writer's development in regards to being an author. The first is the cathartic step where you have to go into your deepest self to remove all of that which makes you feel unworthy or creates an illness or damage in you that could keep the divine light of God from coming through you naturally and innately. That's the first step. And what we do before the retreat is we guide our authors through their own catharsis. And so they are ready to receive the second step of writing, which is pure inspiration. And I'm a big fan of Philip Roth and read a lot of his books, if not all of them. And they are cathartic in nature. And but I think what Mr. Roth has done is extended his catharsis through the writing of his books, as opposed to approaching the catharsis as an individual element of writing and devoting time just to going to the catharsis, so the writing of his books will become easier. So there won't be the mixture of the inspiration and the catharsis. There'll be two separate entities that he deals with individually.
You know, it's fascinating because while I was reading your book this week, I had a catharsis. I had these realizations.
You're welcome.
Right. I had these realizations about some of the big stories in my life, and they became clearer to me. And I felt that it would be easier then for me to approach them after having clarified them to the point where then I felt freer about tackling them.
Yeah, well, we have a tendency as a people to stuff our pain and to stuff our confusions and stuff our hurts. And if we stuff too much into our pockets, it's very difficult to get anything else into those pockets until we remove the stuff that we left there.
Well, it was anger, for instance. And I had anger and disappointment and, you know, different things that have happened in my life with people that were really difficult. And I had attitudes that I guess needed to be cleared up so then I could approach this with more compassion and understanding and then write about it with less of these emotional tags.
Yes. Well, you know, all those little pockets of anger, frustration, misunderstanding that we have are barriers to our direct connection with God. And so the cathartic aspect of writing is designed to remove those pockets of misunderstanding so that the understanding, the true inspirational understanding of who we are and what we're meant to do here can flow through us through the writing of our books. And again, my system is based upon, let's go in and remove those, let's empty those pockets now. And let's approach that as a separate entity of writing. Let's remove that now. So that when the inspiration of God comes through, it doesn't get stuck or clogged somewhere because of those blockages, but it can flow through us smoothly.
Right.
And all life is just, I feel that all life is geared toward returning us to the recognition of the divine spiritual connections and beings that we all already are.
Right.
And,
well,
and that's what writing is.
I work with something called the Human Design System, which uses our birth data to understand the mechanics of our personality. And it shows our glitches, it shows our strengths, and it's really a wonderful tool to learn to accept ourselves. And I think part of being able to feel freer about expressing ourselves is to be able to accept ourselves better.
Right.
And once we know ourselves better and say, oh, okay, this is the kind of person I am, all right, I'm just going to let that kind of person do the writing.
Yeah, so I'm a manifestor generator. So I'm very familiar with the Human Design System. And I really think the Human Design System helps us, Peter, consciously, on the left brain perspective, to understand who we are. So the left brain can better accept who we are and go with the flow a lot better. So I'm in full agreement with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a wonderful system. I actually studied years and years ago with the founder of Human Design out in Sedona. I was there for a week to study with him about 13 years ago.
Yeah, well, Sedona's a big Human Design town, and I'm the father of a manifestor. My daughter's a manifestor, and she's quite unique.
Yeah, lucky you.
I'm very lucky. I'm very fortunate.
No, it's powerful. Manifestors are here to have impact.
Yeah, she does, all right. She's only 10 years old. She's, thank God, she's so heartfelt, but she's very overwhelming. She gets the mojo going in her direction. Everybody's going in that direction, or you'll suffer as a result by not.
Right, and you struggled. It's in your book, the struggles you had as a child and a young man, and and how you came to this. And it's really, I just felt so happy for you that you found your way so well.
Well, you know, we all have a tendency to look at things in our lives as bad, you know, painful. I have a tendency to see things from a much larger perspective. I think that there are sometimes I don't do a very good job of opening up and listening to and going with God. And so I put myself in a position where I have to be slapped in the head sometimes to be able to look in the other direction and see. And as you probably read in my book, my mother attempted to poison me to death when I was 14 years old. And, you know, I've had to deal with that my whole life. And hating her or pushing her away was not an alternative that was working. So I do believe in a greater good. And I had to look and really delve into that myself and ask, okay, what positive benefit could I have gotten from that experience? And what I really garnered from that experience and the fact that I grew up in a very dysfunctional family was the fact that I understood pain because I experienced their pain through me when I was living with them. And to be honest with you, I don't think that I would be a good person, let alone a good mentor, writing mentor, if I didn't have compassion for other people's pain. And so feeling their pain projected on me and being a part of that pain and having to live through it myself has made me a better person. And to be real honest with you, I believe that more than anything else, my parents' dysfunction is responsible for any success that I've created as an author.
Yeah, and I think as you talked about, the emotions in our writing are really what counts, what people want to relate to, and so you can come from that deeper place. We're getting to the end of the show, and this has been so fascinating talking with you. It's really amazing.
Thank you, Peter.
What you're doing and helping people discover not only themselves but their author's voice. And Tom Bird. People can reach you at tombird.com.
That's correct, Peter. And again, one last parting shot is if you want to write a book, if you're having a difficult time writing a book, there's nothing wrong with you. There's just something wrong with the system that you're following, because there's a divinely led system in place for all of us to follow to be the authors we want to be.
Tom, thank you so much for being on Energy Stew. It's wonderful.
Thank you, Peter. It's been a real pleasure. Thank you.
Good. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, H-E-A-R-T, river.org, or 212-222-7748. I'd love to hear from you, and thank you so much for listening.